welcome to a brand new episode of the internet's most hated mafia-themed geek podcast, Long Coat Mafia Podcast. It is I, the one, the only Reverend Godfather, a.k.a. the Martinsburg Madman, a.k.a. this show's frontman and main host. Due to Sasha the Princess of Darkness having some business to take care of over the next few days, we are forced to fly solo once again, but that does not necessarily mean anything bad. Why? It gives us a chance to dive into a topic that is once again very high up on the algorithms, amongst other things. Kind of like 2 weeks ago when we talked about the Sweet Baby Inc. fiasco. We'll be talking later in this episode about the behind the scenes or the quiet on set documentary that dropped on HBO Max about this time last week. But first, as promised, I know we'll probably rehash this topic when Sasha is done with her errands and we get a chance to talk to her about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, because that movie dropped just a few days ago, as I should say, the Friday before this recording. So let's go into that little bit of fun and a little bit of that ranting and raving before we go into the quiet on set discussion. We'll probably talk about that with Sasha, but first, let's talk about let me talk about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Spoilers, heavy spoilers. So you all have been warned in regards to it. Let me say this. I'll try to get everything written down in regards to go through everything that I've written down or notes I took trying to watch the movie and pay attention to it. Again, heavy spoilers. You've been warned. If you don't want to hear the spoilers, please go see the movie. I did enjoy it. I liked it, despite what some people have stated about it. I'll go into that first. A lot of people have been sharing articles from like IGN, Kotaku, and the like. Granted, sites like Kotaku have been proven to be garbage sites right now with the Sweet Baby Inc. debacle that has been going on. But a lot of these sites, and I should say, and on Metacritic, the overall critic review section has been at 44%, while as the last check or last looking at some what people have been sharing, the audience score has been at about, I want to say, 84 to 90%. Like I said, I enjoyed it, and granted, IGN, let's not go into that. Let's go with the movie breakdown and notes in regards to everything. Granted, if you might hear cuts and everything else, again, due to the computer I'm currently using not being the best used computer, the USB aspect is cutting out a lot of times and the mic dies and I have to start all over. So let's go into it. I will say this, the mix of digital and practical effects is always a good sign. And a lot of folks, I will say this, Sigourney Weaver and Rick Moranis are not part of this, sadly. I know a lot of fans were expecting to see Rick Moranis to have a cameo role. I could understand where the writers and directors of this movie stated that there is a lot to go through and a lot of major characters, and seeing the original crew part of it, yeah, that is a little bit, and it would have been to have a Rick Moranis come in briefly or Sigourney Weaver could have been too much. And as I was saying with like Kotaku and IGN, a lot of what is in the movie was member berries as compared to what? Afterlife? Afterlife had a lot more member berries than
this movie did. Yes, it brought back Peck, and it had a little bit of nods into it in regards to, they were very minute in regards to it. What? The firehouse, which we saw in Afterlife, was heavy-hitting member berries. The whole aspect of the car. What? Didn't you guys who saw this movie and were saying, bitching that it was member berries, never watched Afterlife? Dude, folks, IGN, Kotaku, whoever was saying this crap, next time you give somebody a chance to review a sequel, in this case, a sequel of a sequel, make sure that person is the person that saw the previous movie. Or sit that sucker down and tell them, watch this before you watch that. That way, golly gee, they know actually what they're talking about and saying, oh, it's member memories. Dude, shut the F up. And we'll get into my other gripe in a few minutes. Again, seeing the aspect of practical and digital is always a plus because it allows to do something more elaborate. Again, I don't want to pick up or use it as a reference because, no, it's the rule now in the kind of the Ghostbusters community that it's like the first two rules of it, which is you don't talk about the 2016 movie. What's the second rule of the Ghostbusters community? You don't talk about the 2016 movie. But we have to kind of bring it up in regards to two different aspects. And that is, number one, with the 2016 in regards to digital and practical, they were all digital in the 2016 movie. And it kind of ruined everything. And it was too neon-y and all that fun jazz. In this case, having the practical effects, like with Slimer, and we'll get into that in a little bit, and some of the other things, it allowed the ghosts and some of the other aspects a little bit of weight. And to see a chair being moved across the floor or tapped against a window is a good thing instead of, oh, it's a digital chair. We used a digital chair to tap against the window. That would have ruined everything. But to get into it, we started out in regards to a kind of a context scene showing the firehouse being a firehouse in 1904. And to move there to, in essence, present day, or in essence, 2 years later, two or 3 years after the after Afterlife, seeing new aspects like the trap drone and some of the reincorporations with what we've seen in Afterlife, and to see that they used footage from not just the first movie, but toy advertisements for like the real Ghostbusters cartoon, the adverts for the cereal, a brief clip of the music video that was out, and reusing that and stuff from the Ghostbusters sequel was to use like, hey, remember, it's not member berries. Like, they kind of overlooked the controversy of, they destructed New York City by moving the Statue of Liberty. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go see Ghostbusters 2. And here's where we get into Gregory Peck. Everybody was speculating that he was like an overseer, still a government agent. He still is, but he is a mayor. And having seen Phoebe, because he's Peck is kind of ridiculing the Ghostbusters or the new crew about their destruction and busting a ghost. And in the scene, Peck pretty much says, like, you guys, I'll be more than happy that you guys, you know, he's still doing his stuff, like, it's all your fault, you know, I won't rest until it's shut down. And you guys did this before, and that's when Phoebe, you know, says a smart-ass remark. It's like, But you were the cause of what happened in 1984, which he was. But it was a good scene and everything else. And let's see, they try to make the Stay Puft Minis, the new Slimer in this. I don't mind that, and it was a kind of a lead in to a little bit more of a story aspect of the movie. Slimer is in the movie. They gave him a slight story arc with Phoebe's brother in this, and it was like a fun little story arc of Phoebe's brother trying to catch Slimer and failing, but it's a fun little thing, and I liked it, and it was good to see. It was in the movie and not part of the trailer, because a lot of times with trailers, they put in scenes that are not actually in the movie or stuff that's been taken out of the movie. So it's good that that was in there, and it's not the only time that they did that. Good to see that Podcast made a appearance on it. It seemed like a weak excuse for Podcast to be there, but to see Podcast trying to help Ray do a YouTube channel was a little bit of good humor. Now here's where my big gripe before we get into the film. At one point, you see Phoebe sneak out to go to Central Park, and she brings a chess set with her and starts to set up a chess game. It hinted like she was doing this to see if she could reconnect with her grandfather, Egon, from the other side, even though in Afterlife, he kind of faded into the afterlife, so to speak. His ghost kind of dissolved away. So that's what was making Lou to, but we see an appearance of a new ghost or a ghost show up and start. And the way Phoebe's reaction is, it's her grandfather, it's Egon, it's grandpa, but it's this new ghost that's able to talk to her. Some people might say that this ghost talking where Egon didn't, makes a plot hole for Afterlife, but you have to figure the person who played Egon Ivan Reitman is not Ivan, but the person who played Egon has passed away or has long since passed. So, and the thing is, this was a friendship relationship. They became friends. The setting is, hey, I like your shirt. I like, you know, maybe we could, you know, be more friends. It was it was a standard trope seen in many movies where someone, you know, just leans into it, and it's like one side of the tracks versus the other, like a rich person making friends with someone that is a gang member, or the wrong side of the tracks, like rich and poor, or nice and gang member, or a criminal like that, or a criminal. But that was this relationship, and my notes was pretty much what I wrote down. It's like the relationship in this was pretty much ambiguous. I was like, watch, they're using this character, this ghost friend, as a way to get into or move the plot. But I also wrote down, it's like, watch, a site like Mary Sue or Kotaku, or, you know, TikTokers or folks on Twitch Twitter saying that this is going to be a lesbian romance. And it's not, and no sooner than 5 minutes after the movie's over, I'm scrolling through TikTok and Twitter, and I see like loads. It's like the phone gods, the phone algorithms on TikTok and everything else fed me that same, read that draft that I used on my tablet to write this stuff down, saying like, yeah, let's show them this topic. A lot of folks saying that this, it's like, oh, it's nice to see a lesbian romance blooming. How about this lesbian rom sci-fi rom-com blooming? My question is, why are you seeing crap where there is no crap? This is the equivalent of the recent Into the Spider-Verse movie where Spider-Gwen had an LGBTQ support flag on her wall, and everybody that was part of the community going, "Oh my God, Spider-Gwen is either trans or a lesbian because of this." No, because she had a flag on her wall doesn't make her trans. No, because Phoebe has a female friend does not make her a lesbian. That would be like saying, "Hey, these two guys became friends in the movie, therefore they're gay." No, that's not how it is. There was no hint of a lesbian relationship. There was no sexual tension. The aspect of it is she didn't understand the friendship. Is that the opposite is, it would have been like if you're using the rich poor aspect, it's like, "Oh, you don't know what it's like being poor." So the person dresses up and you don't know like what it's like to be homeless. So the person runs away from home and to become homeless for a little while to learn what it becomes homeless. So what does Phoebe do? Because they set it up and she's able for a little while to become a ghost. More able to understand her friend. Not to romance her or make out with her friend. No! It was to better understand her. And it was to help move the plot on. There was no romantic tension going on. None. None whatsoever. I don't know where these people are coming up with this crap. And I can't wait until this movie gets seen by a lot of the commentators on YouTube, like Geeks and Gamers, The Quarterling, and amongst others, even the Star Wars girl, or some of the other YouTubers I tend to follow. Jeez, Louise. Let's see what else. One thing that they show is that there is a ghost research facility on the other side of town, which has a bigger containment unit. I wrote down the aspect of that I would have loved to see the design for this larger containment unit look like something from the cartoon. Yes, there was a nod from the Unspoken, like a wrist busting, like a proton wrist thrower, kind of similar to what we see in the Unspoken 26 film. Let's see what else. That was, I spoke about that. Let's see here. To see the infamous, some of the Easter eggs that we see is that the slime sprayer in the research facility, the folks doing that, and as like an Easter egg, like it was a blink and you missed it. It was in the background along with the wrist unit. Venkman using Egon's little hat from the first movie when Egon was talking to, the gatekeeper or the keymaster, and you see the demonic lion thing in the monitor. So that was like that. So that was cool to see. Seeing the infamous ghost from the library ghost from the first movie being in the movie instead of not just the a trailer thing as a nod. What I also want to talk about was not just before we go into that other little rant, was the aspect of Patton Oswalt being in this movie. Patton Oswalt is so overrated. It's disgusting. I don't know who's more overrated. Patton Oswalt or, hold on, let me pause for a second. There we go. I don't know, to kind of finish the thought, I don't know who's more overrated, Patton Oswalt
Seth Rogen, who is also very overrated. Kevin Smith is starting to become overrated. So it's like one of those toss-ups. To me, Patton Oswalt is like Will Smith. Not Will Smith. Phil Wheaton. Whereas Will Wheaton will show up in a movie just to increase his geek cred. And that fact that his only geek cred is Will Wheaton's only geek cred is him being in Star Wars, and he proclaims that he's his biggest nerd ever simply because he was in a few films or geek related stuff and Star Trek. I know I said it's probably Star Wars. Patton Oswalt is the same thing. He's one of these folks that says he's this biggest nerd, biggest geek ever, and tries to get into movies like this just so he could say that's his geek cred. Whereas if I was at a show, I was like, yeah, I just picked up this piece of page art. It's really neat. And so on. I was like, yeah, I just got this poster. He'd be that person like, oh, I was in this particular movie. You can't outrank that. Whereas most people, you'd say, yeah, I just got this awesome piece of art, or I picked up this at a really cheap price. It's awesome. I'm happy to add it to my collection. And your geek friend saying, oh, that's nice for you. He comes off to do it so tries to out-geek everybody and become this elitist person. But before I forget, it was nice for the folks behind this movie to kind of still acknowledge Ivan Reitman in regards to this, still acknowledge him and give credit and Egon's character the whole nine yards. So that's about it for right now in regards to that. Hopefully me and Sasha will get together and discuss that. Now, let's start getting into the heavy hitting stuff, shall we? Now, as stated earlier in this episode, the four-part documentary called Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids Shows or Kid Actors, dropped on HBO Max last week. It was like both on Monday and Tuesday. So it was about a week ago as of this recording. And a lot of both or a good thing and a bad thing. It just didn't drop on, let me just say this because I almost forgot, it didn't just drop on HBO Max, or I should say the streaming service known as Max. It also dropped on Amazon Prime's video service. So a lot of folks seen this, and a lot of it brought a more of a light, or brought what a lot of folks already knew to a wider audience. Why? Because a lot of this was brought out way before, many, many years ago. Though they talk about how much of a creep Dan Schneider was, though they touched on it, Dan wasn't the biggest creep or person that they went into in regards to this. They went into several folks that actually were, to put it simply, PDF files, or as some have on TikTok called chomos. They were dealing with a lot of stuff that is illegal in regards to what you should do with romantically to children, to touch around the surface. Like I said, we knew about it. When a lot of this was breaking several years ago about Dan Schneider, it didn't focus on the other problems. It was the stuff that was coming out on like YouTube and all that about Dan Schneider, how much of a creep he was, how much was doing. Dan Schneider came out of his little hidey hole to say, hey, he deny. Folks that, were other kid stars that were part of this also said, oh, Dan, him? No, he wouldn't do that. But because of this, folks are looking at more and more folks, kind of like the Me Too movement, in regards to it, this was the break that, even though folks were talking about it, this, the Me Too move, I should say, though folks in the past were talking about, like, sexual harassment and sexual assault in Hollywood, it took the Me Too movement to break that ceiling, to bring a wider light to the problem. A lot of folks were talking about Dan Snyder and the creepiness of him on YouTube and so forth and so on. It took this four-part documentary to break that ceiling. And a lot of folks have come out to say in regards to supporting Dan and like, oh, no, we never saw this happening. Again, with that support that just came out, especially some of it were of the folks that acted as young teen males on the shows that were supporting Dan at this time, and those that were supporting Dan. Let me put it like this. Myself and many others put on their tinfoil hats and said, is it possible that Viacom, who is the parent company behind Nickelodeon, or those at Nickelodeon, maybe even Dan himself, paid a lot of the these male actors or folks that came out in support of Dan, and some of the stuff that, you know, denied everything come out like, oh, that stuff never happened on the sets, despite a lot of the stuff making it out into the shows, like the simulated ejaculation. I'll put an E rating on this so I could talk into a little bit about it, like the simulated ejaculation scenes or the masturbation scenes and stuff like that. That never happened, despite it actually being into final cut of the episodes. Like I said, folks like myself, I was like, did Viacom pay these people off? That were there NDAs? Did they force people to sign NDAs and or pay people off? Where that conspiracy theory or that tinfoil hat theory came into play or makes it seem more feasible is that in Jeanette McCurdy's book, I'm Glad My Mom Died, she states that she was offered $300,000 to keep her mouth shut. Now, you don't have to take my word for it. Let's take Jeanette McCurdy's word for it, because here is an clip, and I should say an audio clip from her reading from her own book in regards to what happened. So, Jeanette, let's hear from you.
Wait, they're canceling the show? I say, unable to hide my glee. Yep, we knew you'd be excited, Agent Number One says. Best part is, Agent Number Two starts in, pausing for dramatic effect. I swear agents are the best performers. They're offering you $300,000. I pause. This doesn't sound right to me. Why? Manager Number Two chimes in. I can tell he feels intimidated by the rest of the men, so by the time he finally chimes in, whatever he says spills out rapidly, as if he's been prepping himself to say it, working up the confidence while the others have been talking. Well, think of it like a thank you gift, he blurts out in one mushed-together phrase. He lets out a sigh of relief after he spits it out, like he's done his part and now he doesn't have to speak again for the rest of the call. A thank you gift? I'm suspicious. Yeah, a thank you gift, Manager Number One repeats. They're giving you $300,000, and the only thing they want you to do is never talk publicly about your experience at Nickelodeon, specifically related to the creator. No, I say immediately and instinctively. A long pause. No? Agent Number Three finally asks. Hell no. It's free money, Manager Number One.
Now, granted, she didn't say Dan Snyder's name for legal reasons, but it was heavily implied because Dan Snyder was the creator for a lot of the shows that were on Nick in between the late 80s to about 2010, 2012. So, there's that. Now, also in this documentary, it came out that Drake, the star from Drake and Josh, that he was molested by a dialogue coach on one of the shows. And once it came out that he was the person that was molested and or sexually assaulted on set,
a lot of folks came out to say that, you know, his friend Josh and a lot of us like, oh yeah, they pretty much made fun of Drake. They Dan Schneider came out to say his reply to what was going on. They made light on it, obviously not seeing what was going on. Now, mind you, with this, a lot of folks did not know. When they did, let me put it like this, where there was, in regards to the several people that were called out as actual or had evidence, whether it be, were called out and or arrested for it. Now, some of the folks that was mentioned in this documentary, four-part documentary, were arrested. Some did go back to Hollywood and still get jobs with kids, despite them having criminal history. So hopefully this gets called out. Now, some people are still wondering in regards to this, that why wasn't Dan, you know, especially a lot of the male co-stars during this time, why weren't they affected? It might have been that Dan was more, again, allegedly, strongly, I'm going to put that strongly allegedly, he might have been more geared towards the younger girls or the teenage girls than the guys, so therefore he was the focus on that. Now, a lot of folks, in regards to, some of you might be saying, what about the parents? What about the parents? Did they know? Did they speak up? A lot of folks did speak up, but it as the documentary tells, and a lot of folks that come out on YouTube channels and all that, type in Dan Schneider on YouTube, a lot of these videos will come up. Now, what people have said, you speak up, you do speak up, you get fired. They spoke up, they got fired, they were kicked off. Now, a lot of people have spoken up in regards to Nickelodeon, this era, in regards to why they didn't get jobs during this time. What was happening was somebody came forward who was a child actress trying to get a job in Hollywood during this time, during the Nickelodeon era, Nickelodeon Disney era. Is Disney doing it too? No one really knows. Probably. I'll say that probably. But speaking, this is what was alleged on the Nickelodeon front. What would happen is the managers that would manage these kids, or if the parents didn't want to do it, were pretty much managers hired by Nickelodeon, meaning these were Nickelodeon managers. They handled it. So if there was weird stuff going on, like what was brought out in this documentary, they turned a blind eye to it. Or, and again, it's like, what about the parents? The parents, somebody has to be on, parent or guardian has to be on set. What would happen was during the audition process, this weird sick behavior, which it is what it is, weird sick behavior, is that during the meet and greets or the mask, let's see who fits the best or has the best look, there would be these seminars for the parents and how to better manage your children or be your child's manager or talent manager. While that was going on, they would have a pool party at the hotel for the kids, and meaning the girls, these teenage girls, or say these girls from 12 to maybe 15 years old will be in bikinis, while the executive producers, Nickelodeon executives, the executive producers for the show, and so forth and so on, will be sitting poolside looking at these girls. Now, granted, again, this is alleged. Now, in regards to shows like iCarly, Victoria's, Drake and Josh, The Amanda Show, all those type of shows that were run by, or in some part that, whereas Dan Schneider was executive producer or a creator on set or director on set for a majority of the shows, the other executive producers or the assistants would distract the parents. So while Dan was doing, or the sickos on set were doing their thing, the folks that were supporting them were kind of distracting the parents, like, over here, look at the food, or we need to meet with you so we can do X, Y, and Z. Now, all this has been documented. Yes, things are going downhill fast in regards to it. Dan did come out, like I said, to apologize. Now, some of the folks that Dan Schneider, one of the things that when this documentary did focus on Dan Schneider was telling, like the female staff was saying that he sexually harassed them. He made two women split a salary between the two. Dan always wanted like neck massages on set. He favored, you know, even in Jeanette McCurdy's book, Saw Your Mother Dying, I'm Glad My Mother Died, she states that, you know, tells her account in regards to it, but it wasn't just Jeanette, it was other folks that he'd whisper in these girls' ears saying, how would you like your own show? You're my favorite, you're, you know, this, that, and the other, how would you like your own show? And especially if one star became more popular over the other. That's why some folks say that why Ariana Grande became more famous is because she became more popular with her singing career versus Jeanette's singing career. Because she did, in her book, say she tried to become a country singer and just it didn't work out. This is grateful. A lot of folks are coming out about the creepy behavior. A lot of folks are saying we didn't know. We were too young. Why? Someone like Gen Alpha and Gen Z and Gen Alpha are saying, like, why didn't you know? It's like, hey, we were latchkey kids. We didn't know. We didn't see. But hopefully this comes out more. Like I said, there was an interview with Gabriel Iglesias in regards to, because he was on All That for a season, some of the stuff he spoke up against, and he only lasted a season on it. The details are coming out in regards to how folks were treated, minorities were treated bad. Now, some have stated that they didn't go into the whole aspect of Jamie Lynn Spears, I think that's her name is, or Britney Spears' sister. I think her name is Jamie Lynn Spears. I'll just refer to her as Britney Spears' sister, younger sister, because she had her own show on Nickelodeon. And it was suspicious that the theory is Britney Spears' sister pretty much was one of the folks that stayed overnight at Dan's house or was left alone with Dan Schneider. And they had, now, again, this is a conspiracy theory. Take it with a grain of salt. And that Dan, had a relationship, a very romantic and or adult relationship with Britney Spears' younger sister, which caused her to have a teen pregnancy, and thus that's why she was kicked off the show. So some people are saying that we don't know until Britney Spears' sister actually speaks out on it. Other folks are saying that if that's true, she's not the only one. There were others. But with that other conspiracy theory, and Jeanette McCurdy kind of alluding to that Nickelodeon paid out or possibly paid out hush money and forced probably folks to sign NDAs in regards to it, we will probably never know until more and more of this comes out. In regards to it, and hopefully with enough people coming out to speak on this, we will know, hopefully, the folks that were really abused by Dan Schneider or others on set do come out and talk about this. Again, keep an eye on YouTube because that's where it's going to come out. And yes, the folks behind Quiet on set have said that, or at least some of the things I've heard, with Quiet on set being such a success and getting out there, there might be a season two. So we'll see what happens there regards to that. So maybe if they do something else, maybe Disney's going to get hit hard. I don't know, but we'll see. We'll see in regards to it. Let's see if there's anything else I need to talk about. Now, let me check on the browser. So let me pause here. No, there's nothing really I should talk about right now. Some of the stuff that I do want to talk about, I want to save for speaking with Sasha in regards to it. Hopefully, by the time me and Sasha get back together and talk, we probably would have both seen Ghostbusters. That time we could get her opinion on it. And maybe by then, we both would have seen the Godzilla and Godzilla versus Kong, or Godzilla X Kong, whatever it's called, comes out, and we'll talk about that. So, who knows? If you like what you hear, please subscribe. If you want to, did you watch iCarly and Nick's shows in the 90s or the early 2Ks? If you did you see that stuff? If you listen to us on Podbean or GoodPod, I know a lot of you listen to us on Podbean. Don't forget, if you listen to us on Podbean, you can leave a comment on the episodes as well as hit that like button. So while you're there, hit that subscribe button too. So follow us on Podbean if you are listening to us on Podbean. If you listen to us on other platforms, subscribe to us there. Follow us there. Leave us a comment. Tell us your thoughts on the whole aspect of the whole Nickelodeon drama thing of the Dan Schneider thing. Did you know? Did you see all the weird and innuendos that they put in there? Leave that comment down there. Did you see Ghostbusters Frozen Empire? Tell us what you thought with that. Or send us an email at longcoatmafia@gmail.com. All our social media and how you could support the show are in the comments, or I say in the description down below. So take care, one and all. I'll see you guys next episode. I know I flipped the script this week and posting this on Monday. Stay tuned for Wednesday. I'll decide to see if we start our road to Four State Comic Con. So take care. What else can I say? But
I'm a gamer. I'm wearing a bikini.
See you next time on the Long Coat Mafia.